you might be in for a little bit of uncertain weather. I'll certainly be out there, and we'll see what happens. Take a very quick musical break here before we talk with our guest today. But Recession Girl, some music, some new music here from KRFP, and it talks about the recession and stuff. So Recession Girls, oy vey. So try some new music from the files here. Here we go.
Yeah.
And you are listening to KRFP Moscow. That was some new music called Ove Recession Girls here on the Wild Clearwater Country Show. We're going to have a guest join us here in about 15 minutes. And as an introduction to that, though, I want to talk about a topic that we will be covering here. A little bit about the Wilderness Act and the biggest threat to the Wilderness Act perhaps ever, on a recently passed piece of legislation that made it through the House of Representatives, and this goes by the deceptive and dishonest name of the Sportsman's Heritage Act. What it does is it would actually gut the Wilderness Act, making it wilderness subservient to any desire by federal or state agencies to turn wilderness into game farms. That means helicopter killing of wolves inside designated wilderness. That would mean all sorts of manipulation inside wilderness. And it could also mean motor vehicles inside wilderness for if you're out just wanting to go out for a day and shoot, that you have the ability to do that. Again, it is not clear from this law exactly what it could mean. It will open up the wilderness system, though, and the intent is clear. It is to destroy the National Wilderness Preservation System as we know it. I'm certainly hopeful that the Senate will not take up this noxious piece of legislation, but we'll be talking a little bit about that a little bit later on in the show. I do want to read from a section of the Wilderness Act that we'll also be talking about. We have our guest on here. And it says this about structures. It says, and this is section 4C. It says, except as specifically provided for in this act and subject to existing private rights, there shall be no commercial enterprise and no permanent road within any wilderness area designated by this act, and except as necessary to meet minimum requirements for the administration of the area for the purpose of this act, which, and then it says in parentheses, including measures required in emergencies involving the health and safety of persons within the area, there shall be no temporary road. No use of motor vehicles, motorized equipment, or motorboats, no landing of aircraft, no other form of mechanical transport, and no structure or installation within any such area. Well, that's a pretty important part of the Act, and that's really the sort of heart of the Wilderness Act, the prohibitions on activities. I'm going to talk about that as it relates to recent court case in the state of Washington. Now some people are trying to overturn a judge's decision by, again, weakening wilderness. And these are people that really don't appreciate wilderness. They may think they do, but they don't understand it. And we'll talk a little bit more about that with our guest from Wilderness Watch here in a few minutes. So wilderness is going to be the topic of discussion today. I did want, though, to take a very quick minute here and to plug participation in the food booth for KRFP at the Renaissance Fair. Also, there are other nonprofit organizations that will be having food booths. I happen to be working for Friends of the Clearwater, and the Sierra Club is also going to be having a crate booth. And usually those are very close together, those two booths. So if anyone is interested in helping with the food booth at KRFP, I would encourage you to get a hold of the station here, 892-9300, and sign up for a shift. Your help is certainly appreciated. And also, if you can't help out but just want to attend the Renaissance Fair, either on Saturday or Sunday this weekend, I encourage everybody to stop by the food booths there of the fine nonprofits in our town and support them. This is actually the biggest fundraiser that KRFP has for the entire year. So coming to the Renaissance Fair is quite important. And speaking of the Renaissance Fair, I'm going to play a little bit of music from a band with a funny name of Heavy Bug. And I believe it's the, or let's, I guess it's the title of the album. And Lindsay Street is the name of the band. And Heavy Bug is the album. And they are from Bellingham. And they are going to be appearing at the Renaissance Fair. And what the CD says about it is this is playing at the Renaissance Fair. Perfect Ren Fair music, warm harmonies, great instrumentation, and flutes. Yes, flutes. So here we go with a little bit of music from Lindsay Street. And it starts with a song called Heavy Bug.
Thank you.
And we're back, the Wild Clearwater Country Show. I have on the line with me George Nickus, who's Executive Director of Wilderness Watch. George, can you hear me?
I can, Gary.
And you're coming through loud and clear, so that's great. And we want to talk about a couple things. There's been some great news, and I don't know if you want to talk about that first, and also some very frightening news. And I mentioned both a little bit earlier on the program that we would be talking about them. At least I didn't exactly say what the great news was in any detail. But which one do you want to start with, the good news or the bad news?
Let's talk about the good news first.
Oh, that sounds good to me. Okay. Well, there's a great court victory, I think. Although all victories don't come as packaged as we always want them to, but there's been an interesting victory on the Green Mountain Lookout. Can you sort of explain to the audience what happened there? And that's an area in the state of Washington here to the west of us, actually near on the Cascades, I believe it's the Glacier Peak Wilderness.
That's right. It's in the Glacier Peak Wilderness, which is one of the original wildernesses that was designated by the 1964 Wilderness Act. And this case involved an issue of a lookout, an old fire lookout that had been abandoned as a fire lookout back around 78, somewhere around there. And the Forest Service recently took some pretty extraordinary actions to remove the old lookout from the mountain and put it back up there. Been quite a debate about whether it was entirely new construction or how much of it was the original, but they went to pretty extraordinary lengths to supposedly save a historic structure in the wilderness and used dozens and dozens of helicopter trips and on to try to make that happen. And it raised some real issues with maintaining old buildings and the like inside a wilderness. And fortunately, in this case, we challenged that project, and fortunately, the court ruled, as it has in a number of similar cases around the country, that kind of activity violated the Wilderness Act's prohibition on structures and prohibition on the use of motorized transport. In this case, it was a helicopter. So it had some. It was a really important case. And had it gone the other way, there's no doubt that we would see agencies trying to rebuild all kinds of old structures inside the wilderness just to try to protect them because they seem to put the preservation of some of their old buildings above the need to preserve the wilderness character of the land.
And I think what's interesting about this case, some people say, well, don't we need fire lookouts in wilderness? And that this is one that had been abandoned and it was not being used as such.
Right. If a fire lookout is actually being used as a fire lookout, the agencies have the authority under the law to maintain it and keep it on the mountain. And frankly, Gary, you know, there's a lot of old lookouts or old buildings that still exist in wilderness, and the agencies aren't required to burn them down or tear them down, and nobody gets exercised if there is some minor maintenance that takes place, but in this case, what the judge described as, he said, you know, it's clear the Forest Service went to extraordinary lengths to protect a man-made structure from the natural corrosive effects of time and weather. The Forest Service went too far, and I think that was clearly the message in the whole case: is that there's a point at which you have to respect the fact that it's wilderness and that eventually the elements are going to win out. That's part of what wilderness is all about, and it will erase the evidence of humans like this kind of structure, and that's fine. That's part of what wilderness is all about, and the agencies would like to hold nature in abeyance and emphasize human-built environment over the natural environment, and that's just not wilderness.
That's right, and in this case, the judge took the very proper approach, and he actually ordered the lookout to be removed.
That's right, and part of that, I think, was, I think part of the reason he did that, you know, had it been had it been a situation where you're just debating whether or not they could maintain the lookout and the judge said no, but he would not have ordered it to be removed. But in this case, he said, the Forest Service built a structure up there that is meant to last for eternity, and they did. This new lookout has the Forest Service actually poured concrete for the footings for it to hold it in place. The construction techniques were with, you know, all new base, all new foundation, and they really built it to last for a long, long time. And he said, "Nah, that's totally inappropriate," and ordered it to be removed. You know, there was a case with a similar case a few years ago in the Emigrant Wilderness, which is on the Stanislaus National Forest in California, adjacent to Yosemite National Park. And there were some old abandoned dams that local people had built in the wilderness back in the 20s and 30s. And the Forest Service wanted to go in, authorize the reconstruction of a dozen of these dams. And in that case, it was a very similar case, very similar legal facts. The judge said, no, you can't rebuild man-made structures in the wilderness like that. But he didn't order that the dams be removed because he just said, look, nature is taking its toll on these things. They're melding back into the landscape, and all you need to do is let them just keep kind of melding back into the landscape. And that was that. But in a case like this lookout, where they essentially put this new structure up there on the mountain, this fortified structure built to last, he said, no, you can't do that. This thing is going to continue to impair the wilderness for a long, long, long time, and it's a lot of new construction. Hell, it even has steel girders in it, in the walls, still steel studs in the walls and the like. And so he just said it's got to go.
So there's nothing new or historic about it. It sounds like it's just a brand new building for no reason. Inside a wilderness, a place that, with those exceptions that are noted in the Wilderness Act, which are very narrow and are meant for either management or, in the case of fires, an actual fire lookout that is used, they're meant to be no structures. In fact, the law prohibits them.
Right, right. And you know, there's been a lot of dispute about the historic integrity of this structure, and you know, it's back in the late 70s or early 80s, I believe, the Forest Service did an assessment of whether or not the old lookout should be listed, considered eligible for listing on the National Register of Historic Places. And it concluded at that time, and the State Historic Preservation Office concurred, that it had already been too modified. I mean, since it was built around 1933, there had been a number of modifications made to it. It had almost collapsed once or twice and had to be rebuilt. And they said it's already been too modified to qualify for the National Register, and left it at that. The Forest Service went back in the late 80s and, for whatever reason, did find that it was eligible to be listed at that point. And the case raised the interesting issues of what happens when you have a structure that is eligible for listing or maybe even is listed on the National Register. Does that then trump the Wilderness Act? And the court found here, like the courts have found in every other similar case, that no, it doesn't. The Wilderness Act has substantive requirements that you have to preserve the wilderness character, and that wilderness character is in part defined as its absence of human-built structures. Conversely, the historic preservation laws are more procedural. They dictate a set of procedures that an agency must follow if it makes a decision to remove or destroy or allow to be destroyed a natural or a historic structure. But it doesn't mandate that they preserve the structure, and that's, you know, I think the reasons for that are pretty obvious. So anyway, it raised all of those issues, and in the end, the court, you know, said, look, the Wilderness Act requires its removal. The National Historic Preservation Act does not require it be maintained. So consistent with both laws to not be rebuilding old buildings inside of wilderness. That's thoroughly consistent with both laws, and that's what they needed to do in this case.
George, what I thought was interesting about this was not only the judge ordered them removed, but some of the reaction to this has been a bit disturbing is a word I would use, but also shows really a lack of consideration for a wilderness as a place and for wildness as a place by people that ostensibly say they like wilderness.
Right, right. Well, the reaction, Gary, I would say has been typical, disappointing, but still typical. And it's what we find when we work on wilderness management issues around the country, is that a lot of people support wilderness and say they support wilderness, but not if it constrains their particular interest. And I've said 1,000 times, that those of us who love wilderness have no problem asking snowmobilers to constrain their activity and stay out of wilderness, or mountain bikers to constrain themselves and stay out of wilderness, or miners and loggers to constrain their use. But when it comes to constraining our own use to preserve the wilderness character of these places, sometimes we're not quite so willing to see those constraints put in place.
Yeah, that's right.
So in this case, yes, there's a lot of folks who love lookouts. I like lookouts too. I like to hike up to lookouts and that sort of thing. I think they're pretty neat. But some of the folks who care more about the Green Mountain Lookout than they do about preserving the wilderness character of this place have raised quite a ruckus and are apparently have gone to some of their members of Congress in Washington State, and they're trying to get Congress to intervene and essentially undo what the court has done and require the Forest Service to keep this lookout up on the mountain. And that's disappointing because, there are a few examples in the history of the Wilderness Act where Congress has taken actions like that and carved out exceptions for wilderness. And every time it's been done through some kind of attempt at a legislative rider, and each time it happens, it makes it easier to happen again. And it's been really deleterious for the Wilderness Act and for the wilderness system. And so it's been really disappointing to see that happening as a result of, in this particular case, but I guess not entirely surprising.
No, not entirely surprising. That is too bad. Is there anything people could do if they want to keep this place wild? Obviously here in Idaho, our legislators are not very supportive of wilderness, either the designation of new areas as wilderness or the retention of our existing wilderness system as it was intended under the 1964 Wilderness Act. But for the folks that maybe live across the border in Pullman, what might they be able to do? This is in the state of Washington, after all, although it's then part of the National Wilderness Preservation System and lands owned by all Americans.
Right. I would say at this point, Gary, it would be most useful for people to contact their members of Congress and encourage them to not succumb to the pressures from those who are trying to get some sort of legislative solution to this issue. It's resolved, and they should encourage members of Congress to stay out of it and let the process play out, because it's important to the wilderness system to do that. And I think it's particularly important, as you point out, to any of the listeners out there in Washington State to contact their representatives and their senators and encourage them to support this decision and not try to rescue it. But also, anybody can write to any member of Congress if they want to, and I think writing to some of the leaders in Congress and asking them to prevent any sort Resource Committee or in the House, perhaps Congressman Markey, who is the ranking member, the leading Democrat on the Public Lands and Wilderness Subcommittee. And, you know, all those addresses, I can't spew out those addresses to you, but all that information is available on the various sites where you can get addresses for members of Congress. The other thing folks can do is, if they're patient, we'll be putting information on our website in the next few days on how people can act, and our website is wildernesswatch.org, and all of the information they'll need will be there.
All right, so check out www.wildernesswatch.org, and I think this is an important issue for people to weigh in on. I would just add one thing, George, is that years ago, just even a few years ago, the agencies would not, the Forest Service would not have done something like this. In fact, it was sort of their policy that to let these old structures naturally sort of fade away with time. And now we're seeing sort of a reaction to that, and it's rather disappointing.
Yeah, it is, Gary. And I, we've been working on an issue that is somewhat similar to this one in another area in California. And I was talking to the one of the Forest Service officials there who was advocating for helicopter use to go in and do repairs on an old historic building, and I said, you know, you've already lost this sort of issue in the courts a number of times. You know what you're doing is illegal. And they said, well, we know that it's not, we know the courts have said we can't do this, but we just disagree with the courts. And essentially, I think what you have is, are some people who are putting their own personal values above that of their responsibility to implement the laws passed by Congress. You know, people in the Forest Service or in any agency don't have to agree with the laws as they're written. But their job is to implement them as written. And if they don't want to do that, they probably shouldn't be in charge of wilderness, period. But if they are in charge of wilderness management, they need to adhere to the laws that the Congress has passed on behalf of the American people. And if the people want to change the laws, they have that opportunity. And if Congress wants to change the law, it has that opportunity. But the agencies really need to implement it in the spirit that it was intended, and that's what I would hope would happen here.
Okay, well, we have a few minutes left, maybe about 10 minutes. There is a big threat out there, though, and that is this new bill that was passed the House. I think it's really poorly named, deceptively named, dishonestly named. What is it, that the Sportsman Heritage Act?
Yeah, something like it. It's House Bill 4089, and it's called the Sportsman's Heritage Act of 2012. And that law, Gary, it's an interesting sort of segue from talking about the Green Mountain Lookout, because this law, as you say, it's really sort of deceptively named, because what it really does is takes aim at gutting the Wilderness Act. And it does that in a couple of ways. The first way is that it authorizes for any activity that is related to hunting, fishing, or recreational shooting, or wildlife conservation, it essentially waives the Wilderness Act's prohibition on the use of motor vehicles, motorized access, mechanized equipment, structures, installations, you name it. If it's related to those, hunting, angling, recreational shooting, or wildlife conservation, it waives those prohibitions in the Wilderness Act. And, you know, frankly, a creative manager can shoehorn in any activity almost under the guise of wildlife conservation. And so it really guts those prohibitions on motor vehicle use, et cetera, in wilderness. The second thing it does is it says that it basically any activity undertaken by either the federal public land management officials or state fish and wildlife officials in carrying out their wildlife conservation responsibilities, that those things are automatically considered consistent with the Wilderness Act. And so, basically, managers could decide that they're going to, and this is not uncommon outside of wilderness, managers could decide they were going to clear cut a forest in order to improve forage availability for big game. And that would be part of their wildlife conservation responsibility. And it would now be allowed. In a part of the world I'm from, down on the Colorado Plateau, where there's a lot of pinyon juniper forests, one of the common activities to, you know, supposedly improve it, that habitat for wildlife, was to go in there with bulldozers, with a big chain in between two big bulldozers, and just chain down hundreds of acres of forest, of pinyon juniper forest. That would fit under this language. A lot of going out and doing prescribed burns in wilderness to create habitat for, create forage for elk, for example, would fit under this. Going out and building artificial water developments, dams, guzzlers, stock tanks, all those kinds of things to provide water for wildlife, all of those things would automatically be deemed consistent with the Wilderness Act if this law were to pass. And so the idea of wilderness as places where humans don't manipulate the habitat, don't manipulate the environment, don't try to dictate the sort of evolutionary direction that these areas are trending, that just all goes out the window with this bill. And if you're familiar with the history of the Wilderness Act, you know that the famous the definition of it and that famous saying that it's an area where the earth and its community of life are untrammeled by man. Retaining its primeval character and influence, managed so as to preserve its natural conditions. This is the definition of what a wilderness is, and this bill just takes that and turns it inside out. And it is literally. Gary, it is not an overstatement to say that this bill effectively repeals the Wilderness Act.
I would have to agree, and it is unfortunate, of course, that the House of Representatives under the current makeup is not at all friendly to wilderness, but one, I was surprised by how large of a majority that actually voted for this bill, so it's passed the House. The Senate is a different story, but, you know, I don't know what to think about the Senate, and if they will try to make some so-called compromise so that we basically still destroy the Wilderness Act. This is turning wilderness areas into game farms.
Right. Not just game farms, but it's whatever anybody wants to do. Basically, it's going to be open season, and I don't know, Gary. This bill was in, has as its supporters and no doubt its initiators. Organizations like the National Rifle Association, Safari Club International, those organizations and the state fish and wildlife agencies are advocating for it. And so given the ability of the NRA to scare the hell out of a lot of congressmen and senators, there's a real risk here with this legislation. And it's ironic because, you know, as you point out, it passed with almost unanimous Republican support. There were a couple of Republicans who voted against it, and 20% of the Democrats in the House of Representatives voted for it. Now, you know, the Wilderness Act passed back in 1964 with only one dissenting vote in the entire House of Representatives, and here's a bill that essentially repeals it, and it passes with all the Republicans supporting it and 20% of the Democrats, and that's a pretty profound statement and a pretty fearful one for those of us who care about wilderness.
The
That's right. And again, I would refer people to the Wilderness Watch website. Something's going to be up there soon about this bill, I would expect.
Definitely. And it is not a bit too soon to contact your senators and urge them to oppose H.R. 4089.
Okay. H.R. 4089. And, you know, we've talked about bad pieces of legislation in the past, but this one, and you're right, George, I think it's the biggest threat ever to the National Wilderness Preservation System, and it does. It, in effect, repeals the Wilderness Act after all these years, and it's an extremely destructive piece of legislation.
Right.
Well, any last words before we conclude the program today, George?
Well, not really too much, Gary. I would want to encourage, you know, listeners out there to, get ready. These are difficult issues. These are challenging times in so many ways. But it's really time to gear up and take on these things. And we can succeed. I'm confident. I'm optimistic that we will turn back these challenges. But it's really important that people get involved, get engaged. We won't turn them back without public support. And so I really hope people will get engaged in these issues and we'll prevail. Wilderness will prevail. That's most important.
That's right, George. Well, thanks so much. This is the Wild Clearwater Country Show, and that was George Nickus, the Executive Director of Wilderness Watch.
Well, thank you, Gary.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.
And we are winding down the show today. It looks like a little bit of weather here. Increasing rain. It looks like tomorrow rain is likely, and 80% chance. And Friday, about a 70% chance of rain. It's dropping to about 40% chance for Renaissance Fair. So that's quite a big chance for rain. Highs are going to be in the upper 40s tomorrow. Lows are going to be tonight in the upper 30s. And throughout the weekend, we're looking at highs in the low to mid 50s and lows in the mid 30s to possibly the low 40s. So it's more of springtime on the Palouse. You are listening to KRFP Moscow. Now we go to Between the Lines.
KRFP thanks its donors and underwriters, including
Mikey's Gyros, specializing in Greek and Middle Eastern cuisine such as gyros, falafel, hummus, tabbouleh, and spanakopita, located at 527 South Main Street in Moscow.
You are listening to KRFP Moscow.
We are now no longer the knights who say Nikesh. We are now the knights who say
KRFP Moscow.
Welcome to Between the Lines, presenting news and analysis of critical issues affecting our region, the nation, and the world. This week we present Christian Ramirez, director of the Southern Border Communities Coalition, who examines what's at stake and how the Supreme Court rules on the constitutionality of Arizona's repressive SB 1070 immigration.